Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Possessor, Save Yourselves, The Glorias, Monsterland, and The Social Dilemma. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Ghost Ship. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Unfortunately, the big news this week that sort of circumvents anything that I'm going to talk about movies is going back to a subject that I've talked about multiple times because I feel like I've been dragged into it, mainly because it reflects what we see in cinema, and that is there's been more focus on white supremacists, the KKK, and Nazis in this country. And I've talked about this multiple times before, that these have been the bad guys in the movies for years, and I think it's worth reiterating it. And unfortunately, over the last couple of years, I've had to have a segment where I talk about this, but I think it's important. So I pulled some clips from previous shows to go back on the offensive against the Nazis, the KKK, white supremacists, Proud Boys, whatever organization you are with that is dealing in hate like this. We need to get rid of this crap. And hint, if you have a Nazi flag, you're probably a Nazi, even if you're not calling yourself one. Anyways, I've said this before, I've said it multiple times, and here I'm saying it again. Roll tape.
Hollywood always, you could always go to the Nazis as the bad guys. You always could. That you could be assured of not having to explain why the Nazis are bad, and you can make them the bad guy in any movie. But somehow in today's world, we now need to be reminded that Nazis were and are the bad guys. And this is not politics even. This is not right or left. You can ask anybody on the right, on the left. You can ask people, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, progressive, independent. It doesn't matter. I think most people should agree. And they would agree. Nazis are and were the bad guys. But we got to be reminded of that. People need to be reminded that that kind of thinking is not good. And it's disrespectful in the extreme to the hundreds of thousands of Americans who lost their lives in World War II fighting in the European theater to let these bastards entertain some sort of modern incarnation that's remotely acceptable. Look, the Nazis are bad guys. Changing your name or your clothes doesn't change it. And this is not right versus left. This is a moral argument. Screw these Nazis. Where's Captain America to punch Hitler in the face when you need him?
It's simple. If you're a Nazi, a KKK member, or a white supremacist, you are a bad person. If you march with Nazis, KKK members, or white supremacists, you are a bad person. If you support the Nazis, the KKK, or white supremacy, you're a bad person. If you excuse the Nazis, the KKK, or white supremacy, you're a bad person. And if you fail to condemn the Nazis, the KKK, and white supremacy, you are a bad person. Now, I get my therapy not from the medical field, but from movies. And after watching this absolute insanity that happened this weekend, it got me into thinking, what are some cathartic anti-Nazi and anti-white supremacist movies? So I want to just kick off the show here with a Fat Guy 5. Now, the first one, Indiana Jones, the whole series, but seriously, just really the first and the third movie, because those have the Nazis as the bad guy. And what does Indiana Jones have to say about them?
Nazis. I hate these guys.
Exactly. I just watched these a couple weeks ago with my youngest son, and they still hold up. They're still a lot of fun, and they unequivocally show the Nazis as the bad guys. The next one, Blues Brothers. Not a whole lot of people think of this movie as one that really takes on Nazis, but they do, because Jake and Elwood come up against a whole bunch of people in their mission from God, and here's what they had to say about Nazis.
Hey, what's going on? Ah, those bums won their court case, so they're marching today.
What bums?
The Nazi party.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
The third in the list, Inglourious Basterds. This is much more overt and obvious. And while I wasn't a huge fan of this movie, if the movie was wall-to-wall what's coming up here, what Brad Pitt says, I would have been a lot more into it.
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain, and I'm putting together a special team, and I need me 8 soldiers. We're going to be dropped into France dressed as civilians. And once we're in enemy territory, as a bushwhacking guerrilla army, we're going to be doing one thing and one thing only. Killing Nazis.
The next one, Captain America, the First Avenger. This is the movie that popularized punching Hitler in the face. And that's a good thing. So here's the clip. And every time you hear the cymbals crash, I mean, this is radio, so you can't see it. But every time you hear the cymbals crash, we know what's happening. Finally, the last one, Porky's 2 the next day. This is not a great film. It's not as good as Porky's, but it does take on white supremacists. At least in this day and age, there's nothing wrong with watching a movie to cathartically release tensions about something in the news, even if it's not the best film. These are bad people. Shame on them. And shame on anybody who doesn't recognize that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to cover is the trailer for the new film, Borat 2, or with its mouthful of a title, Borat Subsequent Movie Film, Delivery of Prodigious Bribe to American Regime for Make Benefit Once Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. It comes out on Amazon Prime on October 23rd.
14 years ago, I released movie film which brought great shame to Kazakhstan. But now I was instructed to return to Yankee Land to carry out secret mission. I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
I really like this.
Let us present Sandra Jessica Parker Drummond.
The daddy has a lot to learn.
My daddy is the smartest person in the whole flat world.
Like many critics, when the first Borat came out, I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was one of my favorite movies of the year, actually. I laughed so hard at it. I thought it was brilliant. And I love the fact that Sacha Baron Cohen was able to make a second movie. And in the trailer, he tips his hat to the fact that people are recognizing him. So even then, the character of Borat goes undercover as different characters. And that kind of makes this funny. This looks like it's going to be a hoot. Like any of the other Sacha Baron Cohen movies, I think this is kind of brilliant. So I can't wait to see it. And I only got to wait a couple weeks. The next one I want to talk about really quickly is The Craft Legacy, which will be coming on VOD on October 28th.
This is all just a little crazy.
Half the battle of having powers is believing you do. That's why covens have always been important.
If we can do that, what else can we do?
We need to put a spell on Timmy.
We don't want to hurt him though, right?
She's right.
The number one rule of the craft. If a person is a danger to herself or others, they will be bound.
I watched the movie The Craft back in the 90s or early 2000s on VHS, and I mean, I thought it was okay. It wasn't my movie, because I'm not a teenage girl. This was a movie that was really focused on teenage girls and the issues that they have, and it looks like it's a sequel, but kind of a reboot as well, following that same premise, that it was going to focus on the issues that teenage girls have. So what the heck does a fat guy at pushing 50 have to say about this that anyone's going to care? It looks like it might be interesting. I'll be curious if it keeps the essence of the original movie, which really kind of had that mid to late 90s vibe to it. So we'll see. But you'll be able to see that right before Halloween. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Monsterland and the Glorias. We'll be right back.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. Well, like last week, I'm actually going to be doing a TV series right now. This week, I'm going to be talking about a TV series called Monsterland, which is on Hulu. There are 8 episodes, and I will give full disclosure. I did not get through all 8 episodes. You know, I had a lot to watch this week. I got through about half of them. But let's talk about Monsterland. Hulu's new anthology series features horror stories that highlight real-world monsters.
When you were a little baby, there's a million yous you could be. And then you start going through life. And you make this choice. And then finally, you end up who he is. He looks like a man. He is as far from human as they come.
First of all, before I actually talk about the TV series itself, I just kind of want to express excitement over the fact that we're actually getting good content for October. For as much as this pandemic has been a nightmare and the quarantines and stay at home orders and everything shutting down has caused a real ripple and problem and some people devastating problems in their lives. And of course, you know, not to diminish the number of people who have died or gotten sick or have permanent damage. But a lot of people are finding ways to cope. And one of the things that is a highlight in this sort of myriad of mess that we're in is the fact that we're actually getting content for Halloween, which we didn't always get. I remember, you know, 15 years ago when the Saw movies were ruling the roost, everything else got out of their way. There would be one horror movie that would open wide in theaters a year, and it would be the Saw movie. And then they got rid of the Saw movies. Those kind of fell out of favor. And then they had the Paranormal Activity movies. And then we'd only get one movie because everyone wanted to get out of those movies way because they made such money. I'd at least want a couple more. And the fact that we're getting not just movies that are, you know, some of them are squeaking into theaters, like The Possessor, which we'll be talking about soon enough. But there's also stuff that's coming on demand. There's stuff that's coming to streaming services. There's TV series that have horror elements to it. There's a lot of stuff. And even if you go to stuff like Hulu, Hulu has its own Halloween section where it has all these different things. It links out to all the different TV series Halloween special. I think the Peacock service does something similar to that as well. Love the fact that there is horror elements out there. Now, when it comes to Monsterland, it's trying to be a little more pragmatic because it does feature these stories with some sort of supernatural monster of some sort, but really their focus is on people being monsters, humanity being a monster to itself. While there may be something strange and supernatural going on in the story, they tend to focus on real horrible things that people do to each other. And it turns more into crime or dramatic stories. It, you know, kind of reminds me of, if you remember the series Inside the Loop, which was on Amazon, that was a science fiction series, and it was hardwired into the show. They'd have these speculative fiction things happen to people, you know, time displacements and multiple realities in existence, and that would be the launching point for a story that then became just about the humanity in there. That was not my favorite thing. I'm not a big fan of just using horror sci-fi just as a jumping off point and then playing in a sandbox of people's emotions. I mean, if you want to do drama, that's fine. But I do find it sometimes interesting. And I think they strike a better balance in Monsterland where there is some sort of pragmatic real horror elements to it. But really what they are, these are drama stories about some pretty awful people and how it relates to monstrous things going on, not just their deeds, but something else in the background. There's also a connection between the stories, and they've got some good actors in it. You got Caitlin Denver. She started out in that Tim Allen series, Last Man Standing. She was his youngest daughter. I think in the last season or two, they recast because she went on to do other movies, and she's been in a bunch of, you know, very significant films. She was in that movie Detroit, and she's shown up in a bunch of stuff. She's quite a good actress, and so she's in that. You've got Kelly Marie Tran in one of them. I do not think the monsters she's fighting are the trolls on the internet Star Wars boards, but you've got some good actors in here. You've got some good names involved, and I have to say I enjoyed Monsterland. I thought it was a neat idea, and you know, it is a little bit heavy, though. It's not something you can watch too many of at once or you're just going to get depressed. But still, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Glorias. Multiple actresses portray feminist icon Gloria Steinem in various stages of her life.
Travel is the best education. It's the only education, really.
I just returned from 2 years in India. The stories I saw and heard are amazing.
I'm going to try you out on a fashion assignment. If you want
me, I love you. They give her pay cuts if you don't smile. If you don't fit into your costume.
Or if we don't do the bunny dip while serving.
Those women in bunny outfits are going to thank you one day.
Fear of public speaking. What Dorothy and I have to say is too important not to say it.
This is the year of women's liberation.
This is a biopic, and it's based on Gloria Steinem's, it's her own memoirs. It's her story of being on the road all the way from when she was a kid, and her father would take her on the road, which, by the way, Timothy Hutton plays her father, and he does a really good job. I love the fact that she had a relationship with her father, and it's not a hateful relationship. I like the fact that there was a certain positivity there. You know, it plays against the sort of like stereotype of man-hating feminist type thing. And so she did love her father, but she did see his problems. But then she went on and like traveled to India and then became a writer. And it tells Gloria Steinem's story. You know, I'm not her biographer, so I don't know how accurate it is. But they do have multiple people playing the role, which is why it's called The Glorias. And even at one or two times, Gloria Steinem actually shows up in the movie. But the actresses, the little girl, I don't know who she is. I haven't seen her in much. She's adorable in it. But then you have Lulu Wilson, who gives her role when she's like 13. And Lulu Wilson's a great little actor, but she's not given enough to do. You have Alicia Vikander playing her when she's in her 20s and 30s. And then you have Julianne Moore playing her all the way from her 40s up to, you know, pretty much in her 60s and 70s. And the problem with a biopic like this, where the actual person is involved in the movie, is they tend to be a puff piece. Generally, you get a more objective view of somebody's life if it's not produced by that person. We saw that with Rocket Man. Same thing happened to the Jesse Owens movie, Race, which, you know, Jesse Owens isn't alive, but his family was involved, so they didn't want anything negative about him. Everybody's life has positive and negative, so I don't think they covered that. I will give them credit, though. Among all the feminist issues, they do cover the lightning rod issue of abortion, which is a problem in anywhere, because no matter how you slice your groups of society, you're going to find people arguing about it, even within the feminists, you know, because you had Catholics, you know, Catholic women who are feminists, but didn't believe in abortion. And I think that they did a good job at least showing that that was the inconvenient issue that nobody wanted to deal with, but everybody we talked about. There are problems with the movie. First of all, it runs 2.5 hours. It should not be that long. There's a lot packed in there, but not enough to warrant a 2.5 hour movie. Plus, it's directed by Julie Taymor, who's best known for doing fabulous Broadway shows. It starts going into these surreal sequences, these almost these Busby Berkeley type flashes and almost song and dance numbers, and it just gets pretentious at that point. It's really jarring too. So the most interesting thing I found about it was that you could look at stuff that she was fighting against in the 60s and 70s and go, oh my gosh, yeah, that was sexist. But still, I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Possessor and Save Yourselves. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film in line, and that is Possessor. Brandon Cronenberg directs this story about a company that uses technology to possess people so they can engage in subversive assassinations.
Interface is active and we're at full power.
What's your levels this time?
You just make sure you pull the trigger on the way out.
After initial binding, you'll be locked in, with no loss of control permitted during this performance.
We can't afford any mistakes on this one.
Ready?
One of the first things anyone who is involved in film or horror films in particular will recognize is the name Cronenberg behind this movie. Now, it's not David Cronenberg, who has had a decades-long history of making movies. Now, the earlier stuff that David Cronenberg had done was these body horror, these grisly psychosexual movies, stuff like Shivers or They Came From Within, you know, and then he did the movie like The Fly in the 1980s. And he was well known for doing these, at times, very graphic and very gory and sexually charged horror films. Now, as he got older, once he got into late 90s, especially into the next century, into this century, he started doing other stuff like Eastern Promises and The History of Violence and Cosmopolis and those kind of films, which are not horror-driven movies. I mean, he just kind of grew out of it. But Brandon Cronenberg is his son, and he's directing this movie. And one thing I respect about Brandon Cronenberg for this is while he's wise enough to use his father's name for a little bit of cred, he's not just aping his father's work. I mean, this is not just a psychosexual body horror movie from the 70s transplanted into the 2020. It's its own movie. And I mean, it's graphic. It's got gore. It's got violence. It's got some very disturbing elements to it. And, it at times is stuff that I believe it's uncut. I don't know if it's carrying a rating some of the places that it's going to show because it is graphic. Both sexually at times, not overt, not too much, but there's also a lot of blood and some unpleasant things that happen. The movie itself is a really interesting look at what a potential technology could be. It feels a little bit of that, like that movie, Curse of the Black Rainbow or Beyond the Black Rainbow. That came out, oh gosh, about 5 or 10 years ago. And it was really bizarre and really out there, but it kind of has that feel to it. This sort of almost modern cyberpunk without the gears and chips and everything, and something a little bit more organic. And the crux of it is the story of this woman who is the possessor, and she is basically merged with somebody else's mind. But it's showing that in doing this too many times, she starts to break down. Her sense of self is breaking down. She isn't quite comfortable in her own body when she's out, and she kind of is losing touch with herself. But then when she possesses somebody else, she doesn't quite have 100% control of them. She's losing touch with them. So by doing this, hopping between body, it's having a serious effect on her. And even outside of the morality of all the awful stuff that she's doing, it's sort of like a spy movie. There's a TV series called, I think it was called The Spy. It was on Netflix. I covered it on the show and it starred Sacha Baron Cohen. It was about an Israeli spy in, I think it was Syria. He was like a Syrian government guy. And one of the things you see whenever you watch a spy movie is that sometimes the spies have trouble separating their lives, and sometimes it blurs together and they have real trouble identifying themselves, self-identifying. And that's kind of what the crux of this woman's problem is in Possessor. And that's really where the interest is. Now, the movie itself, it's very shocking right at the beginning, and the last act, like the last third half hour or so, is intense and violent. It's not something for the weak of heart or the weak of stomach. The middle of it is much more of a suspense thing because you're sort of watching this thing unfold and wondering when, you know, things are going to go into motion. And it's an effective movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was creepy, and it really puts you in that position of saying, what would I do? Either as the possessor or the possessed. It really is unnerving in a lot of ways, and well done. So maybe runs a little bit long, but that's okay. I can forgive that. I'm going to say that Possessor kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Save Yourselves! Exclamation mark. A couple who spends too much time on their phones turn off their tech so they can get away to a cabin right when aliens decide to invade.
We are going offline for one whole week.
No laptops, no phones, no connecting to anything.
What is that? Has this been here the whole time?
The poof? I don't know. Probably.
Oh my god.
What the f-? What is happening?
We need to turn our phones back on.
Listen, it's getting weird here in New York.
Serena, hello, are you there? Well, there's some kind of alien. Very dangerous.
Aliens?
This is an independent film, and even though it's got a science fiction story to it, it's not a hard science fiction movie. It's also not a high visual effects movie. And that's okay, because that's not the purpose of the movie. The purpose of the movie is this relationship between this man and woman. And I point that out specifically because I've seen movies that take a genre angle to them and then spend the entire movie avoiding doing anything with the genre. The best example I can think of is Monsters. It was this movie, Gareth Edwards, he had this whole movie, and it was about these monsters that you never saw until like the very, very end. And I thought that that's a little bit of a cop-out, because, I love science fiction, and you can do some great things with science fiction and horror and avoid the special effects, but you got to deal with the actual, fantastic element. And what Save Yourself is about, it's really more about their relationship and the absurdity that they've decided to disconnect right when aliens invade. So you never see the violence of the invasion. I mean, you see a little bit of it, but very, very brief. But you don't see anything of them like laying waste to big cities. And the aliens are just these little tribbles. They're these poofs. They look like a footstool. They look pretty benign, but they have certain things that they can do that can cause problems. But really, most of the movie is this couple dealing with each other, and it's much more of like a mumblecore comedy where they're sort of dealing with their own interpersonal issues and the fact that they're learning to interact with each other again instead of just always playing on their phones. But it's kind of charming, because the characters, they're sort of that millennial couple where the guy, he's wearing skinny jeans and he's not a macho guy. He doesn't know how to chop wood. He doesn't know how to do any sort of plumbing, but he's a nice guy. He's annoying. And of course, each of them have their own annoying things, but that's a relationship. I mean, my wife and I, we've been together for over almost 25 years, and we get on each other's nerves and we have annoyances, but we don't hate each other because of those annoyances. You just learn to work around them. And that's a real tough thing to do in a relationship comedy, is giving the characters annoyances, but still making you like the characters, because you want to show their vulnerabilities, but you want to make their annoyances of being like, well, I could live with that. I mean, I could deal with that, you know? And I think that works, because both the man and the woman, I mean, she's like, she's uptight and she's herself, she's a bit of a control freak, and he's, not exactly go-getting in a certain way, and he's a little bit lackadaisical at times. So they each have their problems, but it works out, and you genuinely like them. Like, there's a point near the end where I'm like, any other movie, I might just hate these characters, but the actors portray the characters well, and they do a good job making you like them and making you happy you went along this weird, bizarre journey with them. And then when they do reach the science fiction elements of it, with the alien invasions and the poofs that are going after them, they have enough budget left to do some neat things, but they also set it up so that these things are not giant CGI creatures that need full, realistic, multiple layers of development. They can shoot this stuff and put it in pretty easily and keep the budget down. So ultimately, I mean, Save Yourselves is a cute, quirky, fun, romantic relationship comedy that just happens to take place during an alien invasion. And it does give you the whole, well, how would you handle it? What would you do? And would you do stupid things like they do? And ultimately, would you make the decisions they make? Because that's kind of what saves them as characters that I liked, rather than, if they made other decisions. So I'm going to have to say, I enjoyed Save Yourselves. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Social Dilemma and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Ghost Ship. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. I want to talk about this one. It's actually been out for about a month on Netflix, but I've been seeing a lot of people talk about it online, and I think it's worth approaching and giving a discussion. And that is The Social Dilemma. This docudrama examines how social media and other tech companies gather information and exploit it for a profit.
What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing.
What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
There were meaningful changes happening around the world because of these platforms. I think we were naive about the flip side of that coin.
This is one of those that kind of came onto Netflix, and I remember seeing some publicity for it, but it really didn't hit my radar until I started seeing people, ironically enough, on Facebook and Twitter start talking about it, saying, I just watched this movie. It's chilling. It's terrifying. You really should watch it. So I finally broke down and I watched it, and ultimately it breaks down the way the algorithms work and the purpose of the algorithms, more or less, that don't just control Facebook, but other things like Google and Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. It's got the people who worked on these programs and applications. You've got people who worked at Instagram, and they have the guy who created the like button in Facebook. And it's all these people who worked in this tech and how they put it together and how, of course, they insist that it was all just mundane and it was meant to do good in the world. Well, what ended up happening is the algorithms took over and monetary issues took over. And then it was figuring out ways to monetize and make money off of all this stuff that's going on the internet. And it is chilling when you realize the way the algorithms are meant to manipulate you and the way they push their data to you and then how they refine themselves and how artificial intelligence is brought in to make it as wholly efficient as possible to know when to give you this notification, when to do this to you, when to do that. And that is exactly what social media does. And I appreciate that and I understand it. It does at a certain time get a bit self-congratulatory. Remember, these are the people who created this stuff. And so there's a point in there where I feel they're saying, oh, look at this genius stuff that we did. And we didn't realize how dangerous it is, but weren't we smart? Oh, we've done something that no one else has ever done before. And aren't we amazing? We're so smart and we created this Frankenstein. Sorry, guys. And that seems to be at least the prevailing wisdom for all the people who worked on this stuff. And I think there's a certain amount of justification for that. But on the same token, you do have to sit there and be like, come on, people. Don't be so arrogant. Every time there's new technology, anytime there's something, especially sweeping new technology that a huge chunk of the population uses, anytime that happens, people feel that it's changing things and people will never recover. I mean, you can go back when theater first came, when movies came out, those were considered subservient to actual live theater and that was just a fad. When sound came into movies, when television showed up, I'm assuming when radio showed up, I'm assuming when the printing press showed up. I mean, you can go back to when my dad was a kid, he'd talk about how everyone was upset about EC horror comics and how they were going to create juvenile delinquents and destroy the mind of the kids. And then if you go farther along, you got stuff like, I remember when I was a kid, this isn't even like about ideas and concepts. It was when Walkmans came out. When Walkmans came out, everyone was all upset because people would just disappear and they just get in their own little world because they had music playing in their ear. Well, I mean, come on, seriously, that's really not that big of a deal. It seems absurd when you look at it now that people were so afraid that people were disconnecting because they were listening to music with headphones. The big difference with social media is it's this grand platform that's global that can affect huge swaths of the population very, very quickly. And there's a lot of stuff to be terrified of. And I talked about in the first segment about these extreme hate groups, you know, stuff like the Proud Boys and the KKK and these neo-Nazis and all that kind of stuff, and where the internet becomes this breeding ground for that. And not even just not the overt nasty stuff, but the stupid stuff like flat earthers and anti-vaxxers and stuff like that, where fake news and false information spreads faster. So yes, there is a lot of stuff to be terrified of. And there's also a lot of stuff to be worried about with kids. But they put this like docudrama exposition in the movie and they show how a family's trying to break from their screens. But you don't just grab the kids' phones and say, okay, we're done. No, you give them a chance to say, okay, at 6 o'clock tomorrow, we're turning everything off, going to a cabin and the poofs are going to invade. But, you know, you're going to turn it off at 6 o'clock and give the kids a chance to at least post on his socials, hey, I'm not going to be able to answer anybody anytime soon.
part of it is kids are a social media unit now. My kids have their phones and they're constantly checking stuff. And yeah, sometimes they use it too much and we sometimes have to get them to dial stuff back. Look, I never have notifications on. I never get a Twitter or Facebook notification because that just is noise to me. And I know I'm unlike most people. Most people want that stuff. But really, honestly, I think in a certain way, this is a little bit overly self-important, but it is a little bit of a warning for people who want to dial back on the data stream in their life. In the end, I'm going to have to say that the documentary is interesting and it does kind of rock, but you got to take it with a grain of salt.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on the Shout Factory or Scream Factory's new release of the 2002 film Ghost Ship. A salvage team finds a deserted ocean liner in the Bering Strait, but encounters terrifying ghosts haunting the ship.
Last month, I was out in the middle of the strait when I came across this.
What do you think a ship like this could be worth?
Depends on if we have the right to salvage it. I do know one thing. Sea gives you an opportunity, you take it.
It's an ocean liner.
It's the Antonio Graza.
Any sign of what might have happened?
Nothing. No passengers. No crew. No captain. No mention of anything in the ship's log.
I think I saw something I couldn't possibly have seen.
I remember watching this when it first came out, and I thought it was kind of a throwaway movie. It was done by Ghost House. A lot of ghosts in this title. But it was done by Ghost House, which, of course, did movies like The House on Haunted Hill and 13 Ghosts. And a bunch of there was this big push right around the turn of the century, which is, by the way, 2000 and not 1900. I had a host this week tell me he was distressed when I referred to turn of the century as being just 20 years ago. But around the turn of the century, there was this push to do these modern horror movies. And I appreciated them. And I remember seeing Ghost Ship. I thought it was okay. Going back and revisiting, I think it's kind of a cool little movie. I mean, there's nothing special. It's your essential haunted house on the ocean kind of movie. It's got ghosts. It's got violence. You got people going in and you got a large number of people on the crew because you're like, yeah, some of them are going to die, if not all of them. And it's got some neat twists and turns. It's got some pretty grisly stuff in there too. So if you're a gore hound, you get some good gore in this movie. And that's always something that I think horror fans have to look for, that because there are some movies that pull their punches on gore and shouldn't. And then there are some movies that just overdo it on gore. And then you said, well, that's kind of overblown. This one, I think, strikes a decent balance. Ultimately, it's a neat little, like I said, haunted house movie on the ocean. And, you know, it kind of connected to me. So it's neat to revisit 18 years later. And, you know, if you like ghost stories, you can do a lot worse. There's also a whole bunch of special features. Shout Factory, whenever they put together a new DVD or Blu-ray, they put a lot of good stuff in there. They've got interviews with, you know, people like the music effects supervisor, Isaiah Washington, who was one of the actors in it. You've got producer Gil Adler talking about it. You look at the special effects or the visual effects, and you look at the gore itself and the design of the movie, and sort of like the lore behind the ship, the ghost ship itself. So there's also a music video and the original theatrical trailer. So it's a nice little buy, and it's worth it if you kind of want to go back to those Sam Raimi ghost house features from the early part of the 21st century. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray this week include the Criterion Collection for The Elephant Man, Mallrats, Jaws, the three-movie collection. For some reason, they left out the terrible fourth movie. And then Blumhouse has a 10-movie horror collection, which is a bunch of their stuff they've recently released, like, you know, Happy Death Day and Ma. And then Universal has a 10-film sci-fi collection, which is a bunch of their science fiction movies over the last 10 years or so, like one of the Hellboy movies and I think Oblivion, a bunch of other stuff that's released by Universal. And that's it for this week. I need to go now, and next week I'm going to be talking about War with Grandpa, Welcome to Blumhouse, and The Haunting of Bly Manor. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.